Hey, Aaron. Can you hear me, Aaron? Can you hear me? Aaron. 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 Hi, Bam Bam. I swear, he's going to have to start coming up here in the office with me because I can't. I have to look at him and see him, and I can't hear him. Okay. Thank you, Bam Bam. Thank you. All right. Now, today is Friday, April 26th. Good morning. I'm your host, Gina Jo, coming to you live. Just sent two mails. Okay. I am your host, coming to you live from the DJ Pebble Studio located in Mile High City, California, Colorado. Welcome to the program. It's so great to have you with us today. If you're listening to this later on the download, thank you so much. Appreciate that you downloaded. Join us sometime. I'm here every Friday right now. It used to be Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but right now it's going to be Friday for a little bit. Until 7:45 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. Thank you for your continued love, likes, shares, and downloads. We have a lot to go over today. Aaron is with us with sports. We have music from the documentary Punk Attitude, a film by Don Lutz that Bam Bam, or Tuttle, as you may know me by, watched last night. But right now, I'm going to start the show with the word of the day. Quote of the day: spreading knowledge is a powerful way of adding value to the world. So, maybe if I put it on low and then turn it up, that's just weird. Yeah, now you can barely hear. All right, whatever. All right, so community is the word today. The quote that I have: without a sense of caring, there can be no sense of community. I spoke about tribe, having a tribe, last week or the week before that. Community, kind of similar to that, but just as important. This is what community is not. A community is not just a bunch of yes people. I mean, I guess you could have that, but it's not true. It's not, you know, somebody, for me, it's not a bunch of people that I want to be around. Being a part of a community means having a sense of trust, belonging, safety, and caring for each other. It also means sharing common interests, values, and aspirations with other people. Strong communities are important because they give us a sense of belonging. There was a study of the impact that COVID, the pandemic, had, and it showed that loneliness was one of the factors with the greatest impact on people's health. Ultimately, communities give people a supportive group to help them cope with difficult challenges life throws at you. You can band together to solve problems and celebrate life's happy moments. When we feel isolated, anxiety, depression, and seeking meaningful connections to help them cope, you can help. You know, that's how your community helps you. Hi, BP. Hi, Alan. Hi, SYFIJDFW. Welcome. All right, where did I leave off? And that's one of the most important functions of community can perform, is helping us cope through all of those feelings of anxiety, isolation, and depression. There's never been a more crucial time to be there for others who are struggling with their mental and physical health than right now, with all the pressures in this fast-paced world that we live in. But you do need to be careful about who you let in to that, you know, that core group, that core community that you have. It's not just about having a million followers or even 100 followers. That's not what it's about. A community is much more personal than that. Be wary of those who consistently complain without seeking solutions. That might be somebody you might not want to hang around with after a while. If someone disrespects you, they don't belong in your inner circle. if you've outgrown your friends or taking a more mature path in life, it's essential to reevaluate your friendships. And also, drama seekers. You don't want them. They thrive on attention and drama, often at the expense of your time and energy. So those are all kind of worth not having. At least I know they're not worth having in my life. So choose wisely. You got this. I believe in you. So there you go. It was a short one today. Just because we have a lot of music. Bam Bam and I watched the documentary, music documentary, Punk Attitude, a film by Don Letts is the complete title. It's free on YouTube. If you do like documentaries on music, it's worth your time. We split it into two nights. We're gonna watch the next half on next Thursday. Hey Nick, good to see you. Next Thursday, but we watched the first half last night, and it is really, when most people think of the word punk in punk music, they think of, you know, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, that era. This documentary gets in way before that. So we're going to talk about that later on in music, starting around 8:25. But until then, I'm going to do a couple jokes, and then we'll get into Aaron with some sports. So I know Aaron's not going to laugh at my jokes, but maybe somebody else will. All right, what type of music do balloons hate?
Pop music?
Yes, you got it. Dang it. Bum, bum, pop. Okay. Where did the lamb get its hair cut?
At the bar. One more time.
Where did the lamb get its hair cut? At the barber shop. Get it? I know. Welcome, WZDFCFT. Good to have you. Let me play Aaron's music before we let him. Oh, I got to turn the music up. I don't know what's going on with all this white. So there's your music, Aaron.
Goodness.
I know. There's no happy medium at all. There's no happy medium. All right, so you've got a lot of sports to go over with us that you watched this past week, and then we'll get into the music around 8:25. So I have your list, and it looks like that you wanted to start off with Friday Night SmackDown.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So first with Friday Night SmackDown, just like Tag Team Awesome Truth, Tag Team A-Town Down Under, Grayson Waller and Austin Theory were awarded new WWE tag team titles all before the Street Profits would defeat three other tag teams to become the number one contenders to challenge for the tag team titles.
All right. Not sure what all that means, but at least those guys won. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Then AJ Styles would also become a number one contender, but for the undisputed title against Cody Rhodes at Backlash after getting his revenge versus LA Knight.
Okay, so what did you just say?
So this was the number one contenders match for the undisputed title.
Uh-huh.
And AJ Styles defeated LA Knight. So now AJ Styles is going to face Cody Rhodes at Backlash for the undisputed title.
Okay, I know Nick's laughing at me. I'm like, wait a minute, what did you just say? Because it's hard to understand all of this. I get so confused with the WWE and all the different titles and all the different matches. It's confusing. There's so many of them. So I know I always say it, I need to watch it. I do watch some of it, but I stream and it doesn't come on where it was. So thank you for explaining that, Aaron.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next, Santos Escobar in singles action scored a victory versus Carlito of the LWO.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And wait a minute. Now, Carlito, for some reason, I'm thinking of a woman, but it's not. It's a man, right?
No. He's kind of have like an afro a little bit.
Okay. I don't know who in the women's has a name close to that or used to in the olden days.
I think you're thinking of Selena Vega, you think?
Maybe. I don't know. But a lot of the names that you're saying, I've never, they're not, are they new? Like, is he new?
Curly? I mean, he's new-ish.
Okay.
Like, he's been around for a while.
All right.
Yep. So that's the WWE Friday Night SmackDown. So then in the NBA play-in tournament, the Miami Heat, before losing to Boston in game one of the playoffs, 114-94, they defeated Chicago 112-91 to secure the number 8 seed. New Orleans, before they lost game one to the top seed of Thunder in game one, 94-92, they defeated Sacramento 105-98 to secure the 8 seed in the West.
Okay. Okay, so you, I see you have the playoff slate. You have it again. Yeah, I was going to ask you a question. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, so in game one, Miami lost 114-94, but then they won game two recently, 111-101. So the series is tied at one.
Okay. And I know you're going to talk about the Denver Nuggets, right?
Yeah.
Okay. After.
And then Oklahoma City, they defeated New Orleans 94-92 in game one, and then 124-92 in game two. So Oklahoma City's up two to games one against New Orleans. And here's one other thing. Jason Tatum recorded his first ever career triple-double in the playoffs in game one of 23 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists, plus going 8-for-8 from the free throw line.
Oh, that's good. Yay. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so he didn't. Yeah.
Yay. You said his name was Jason?
Jason Tatum.
Yes, Jason Tatum. Good job. That's exciting to do, to make that accomplishment, especially at the playoffs. So that's good.
Yeah. The Nuggets would win game.
Oh, wait, Aaron. I don't know if everybody else, if he went out for everybody or just me. Are you there? Yeah. Aaron, you're breaking up. Okay. We didn't hear anything about the Nuggets. So start over with the Nuggets.
The Nuggets would win game.
Nope. Are you moving your mic or something? Because whatever you're doing, you're going in and out.
Oh, no.
Okay. Start over with the Nuggets.
The Nuggets would win game one and two at home against the Lakers, 114-103 and 101-99. That included a game-winning shot from Jamal Murray. Murray also scored 14 points in the fourth quarter in game two as well to go with his total of 20 points.
That was an amazing, that was a crazy game because everybody thought it was done. And it was just the last minute. And you had to watch it. I had to watch it over and over because I was like, what just happened? I thought the Lakers had it. And then the Nuggets were all going crazy. I'm like, I had to watch it again and again. It was crazy. So, and then the interviews afterwards, oh, the Lakers, man, they got a piss poor attitude. Terrible attitude.
Yeah, I'm going to catch up for game three this afternoon after I get home from work.
Last night's game?
Yeah, because it was on late at night. It was like on at 8 p.m. last night.
So I'm not sure. But you know they won. It's been all over the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Cleveland won.
So wait a minute. Does that mean that the Lakers are out of it since they lost three?
No, they're still in the series. You have to win 4 out of 7 games in order to advance to the next round.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
So it's best out of 7, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Cleveland also won their game 1 and 2, series against the Magic, 97-83 and then 96-86. Jared Allen recorded a double-double of 16 points and 18 rebounds in game 1 against the Magic. A double-double is when a player records double figures in at least two stats.
Oh, we just lost you again, Aaron. Wow. I don't know what is going on.
Wow. I don't.
Oh. Hello?
Are you there?
Yes.
I'm not sure what's going on there. Don't move. Just stand really super still. I'm not sure why that's happening. It's probably not you. It's probably Podbean, but just try to be real still. Just say what you were saying over the last part of it, Aaron.
Jared Allen recorded a double-double of 16 points and 18 rebounds in game one against the Magic.
Okay.
And a double-double is when a player records double figures in at least two statistical categories in a game.
In one game. Okay. That's amazing.
In a game of basketball, like points, rebounds, points, assists, that sort of thing.
But in the game that they're playing, right? In one singular game, they have to do that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
The Knicks and Timberwolves won their first two games of their series against the Sixers and the Phoenix Suns. And I also have this. The Mavericks lost game one to the Clippers 109-97, but then the Mavericks bounced back and won game two 96-93. Luka Doncic recorded 33 points and 13 rebounds in Dallas's game one loss. Anthony Edwards recorded 33 points and 9 rebounds plus 6 assists in Minnesota's game one win, while Minnesota would out-rebound Phoenix 52-28 in game one.
Jeez.
Dante DiVincenzo would hit the game winner against the 76ers in game two along with 19 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals.
A lot of playoffs, a lot of sports, actually.
Yeah, mostly NBA playoffs and Stanley Cup playoffs right now, this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of which, in the Stanley Cup playoffs, Carolina and Boston would take care of business in game one of their series, 3-1 versus the Islanders, New York.
Thank you, BP. Thank you, Nick.
And 5-1 against Toronto. But Toronto would bounce back in game two, 3-2 after trailing 2-1 after the first period. Carolina would make a complete comeback in game two, 5-3 after trailing 3-0 against New York. The Golden Knights and Oilers would win their game one of their series 4-3 versus Dallas and 7-4 versus the LA Kings.
Okay. Now, I didn't hear you say the Avalanche. Did you say the Avalanche?
No, that's coming up.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Golden Knights, they won game one 4-3, and then the Golden Knights won game two 3-1. So they're up two games to zero. And now this is partly about the Avalanche. The Avalanche would tie the series 1-1 against Winnipeg 5-2 after losing 7-6 in game one despite goals from Makar, Nichushkin, Miles Wood, and McKinnon.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I knew they were in Canada somewhere, but I didn't remember where.
Yeah, but they're back here for games 3 and 4 now.
Okay. And you said who were playing? The best
record at home, like on home ice, so.
Oh, hopefully that's good.
Hopefully we can get some momentum at home and take control of the series or something.
Yeah. Now, who did we play in Canada? The Canucks?
The Winnipeg Jets.
Oh, the Jets. No. But is there a Canucks? Or did I just make that up? Okay, so there is one. Okay, all right.
There's like several. There's like a few couple teams in.
Oh, just a few.
There's a couple teams in Canada. Professional hockey teams in Canada, because Calgary's got one, Toronto, Vancouver, and Winnipeg.
Yeah. Remember we thought that was their sport was, oh my gosh, I can't talk, hockey, but it's actually. Yeah, like
lacrosse?
Lacrosse. Wasn't it lacrosse? That's what they're. Yeah, it was something totally different. We always thought, wow, they're known for playing hockey, but no, it's lacrosse.
And so also the Florida Panthers would win game one and game two of their series versus the Tampa Bay Lightning 3-2 in game one, and then same 3-2 result, but in overtime. And I think I have their score from last night too. They beat Tampa Bay again 5-3, so they have a 3-0 series lead in that series. And then the Rangers beat the Capitals 4-1 in game one, and then 4-3 in game two. And then 4-1 in game one and 4-3 in game two.
Okay.
Rangers led 3-1 after a scoreless first period in game one versus Washington with goals from Jimmy Vesse and Chris Kreider.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Oz. So who are the Avalanche playing next? Do they play?
Yeah, they're still playing Winnipeg because you have to win 3 out of 4.
Okay, to move on.
To advance. Yeah, so it's like what the Nuggets are doing, sort of.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's a different sport.
Okay. All right.
For Monday Night Raw, tag team Awesome Truth would defend their titles against tag team DIY, while tag team The New Day would defeat Imperium in tag team action.
All right, keep going.
As would Andrade and Ricochet against Santos Escobar and JD McDonough of the Judgment Day.
Okay, I know those names.
Sheamus in singles action would defeat Shinsuke Nakamura before, in the main event, Becky Lynch would redeem herself by winning the Women's Battle Royale to become the new WWE Women's World Champion.
Now, who did she wrestle?
I have this right here. I put this in here. Lynch lost at WrestleMania this year for the same title against Rhea. Like she lost. She was competing for that same title, but she lost against.
Right, Rhea, right. But who did she play? Who did she wrestle on Monday night, or did she just get it because Rhea Ripley was out? Didn't she have to wrestle somebody?
Rhea Ripley had to vacate her title because
so she just automatically gets it.
Yeah, like
I see. Okay.
Battle Royale matches, if you toss somebody over the top rope and they land on the outside, they're eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever was left remaining standing became the new Women's World Champion.
Okay, and so since Rhea Ripley got hurt, they've taken away her trophy and they're giving it to Lynch.
Yeah, so she won the Battle Royale match, and now she's the new Women's World Champion.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, well, I'm glad.
In the 2024 NFL Draft for round one, the Chicago Bears selected Caleb Williams from USC, followed by Jaden Daniels of LSU at number two to the Washington Commanders. Drake May from the University of North Carolina went number three to New England before Marvin Harrison Jr., went to Arizona at number four. J.J. McCarthy, my guy, went to Minnesota via trade with the Jets, New York. I believe it was at pick number 11.
Uh-huh.
And then the Broncos, they ended up choosing quarterback Bo Nix at number 12.
And I heard people are not happy about that because he's older.
I don't know.
I heard people aren't happy about that. I heard somebody say that he was 40, and they're not happy that they didn't pick somebody in their 20s. I don't know.
That's just what they were talking about. I have this here. Minnesota traded twice in the first round that included pick number 17, drafting Dallas Turner, an edge linebacker from Alabama.
Nice.
So yeah,
now, how many days is the draft on? Was it just on yesterday? Is it continue?
Yesterday was the first, just the first round, and then today is going to be rounds two and three, and then tomorrow will be four through seven.
Holy moly, 3-day event, today, huh?
Today is two.
Oh, Bo Nix is 24. Seven. See, you can't believe everything you hear, BP. They were talking about him being in his 40s. What the hell were they talking about? Thank you, BP, for setting it straight.
I have the scores from the NBA playoffs. The Knicks lost game three to the 76ers, 125-114. So the Knicks are leading that series 2-1. And like I said before, the Florida Panthers defeated Tampa Bay 5-3. And then the Carolina Hurricanes defeated the Islanders 3-2. So the Panthers and Hurricanes are up 3-0 in their series.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And that's it.
That's it. All right. Let me give you a round of applause, Aaron. Good job.
Thank you. I'm actually having pretty fun. Actually, I am liking playing my sport.
It won't stop cheering. There you go. You actually liking?
I'm actually liking to write writing my what I watched this week in sports and like summarizing it on a couple of pages.
That's good.
Like I said before, like I'll take notes first, but then I'll start like writing my first draft on Tuesday. I go on Tuesdays, and then Wednesdays I go back, I make some edits, and then on Thursday I on Wednesday I'll rewrite it after making edits, and then on Thursday add more to it, and then the finishing touches before Friday.
Well, that's good. That's you have a goal of wanting to have your own podcast someday. So that's awesome.
And I've been also working on the sports journal too, like researching stats and everything too, because I was only doing the NBA play-in tournament games that I watched this year because of how crazy the playoffs are right now. I'm just going to wait until there's like a certain point when it starts to like die down a little bit and start like catching up a little bit.
Nice. Let me see.
Yeah.
Got a message on the bat line. Let's see.
I was wanting to say I'm excited for our stair climb tomorrow.
Oh, yes. I totally forgot to say that, didn't I? Oh, Aaron and I are doing tomorrow. We are doing a climb for air. Fight for air? What is it exactly? I have it on here somewhere.
Fight for climb, I think it was.
Fight for air climb. It's lung cancer. Lewis's dad is fighting lung cancer right now, and we are doing this climb tomorrow. I can't believe it's already tomorrow. We've been training for it. I've been training for it. It's 1,998 steps going up. It's flights of steps going up. It's going to be held at Coors Field, which is going to be pretty cool to do. We've done the Bronco 7K. How many times? Four times?
Five times in 6 years.
So we've done the 7K five times, which is, that one's really cool for us too, because it's all around the Bronco Stadium, and then you end going through the tunnel and onto the field, and it's just awesome. It's just, when we first started doing this, goodness, trying to think of when we started first starting working out and stuff, 2018 maybe. We've never done any 5Ks, 7Ks, anything. We've done eight. This will be our eighth one. Aaron?
I guess it would count as a 7K or a 5K.
Well, it's the eighth event that we're doing. It's right. Not a 7K or a 5K.
That's what I meant.
The eighth event that we're doing. And when we first started, that was a goal, just to do one. And we started with 5Ks for the Arthritis Foundation and then went on to the 7Ks with Broncos. And now we're doing this fight for air climb tomorrow. So fingers crossed, Princess Grace doesn't fall. Oh, Colorado Springs. When we first moved here 32 years ago from California, that is where we lived, in Colorado Springs. I'm trying to think of the streets we were off of. Aaron was born at Penrose Hospital in Colorado Springs. So we lived right down the street from there. So I know exactly where Colorado Springs is. So yeah, wish us luck. Keep our fingers crossed for us. That's going to be a lot. I mean, the most that I got up to was 63 flights of stairs going up. Double them because I had to go down them, but I was only counting going up. So keep your fingers crossed for us, and it'll be fun. Hey, Mike, didn't see you pop in there. Hi, Joe Zanny. I'm so sorry if I got your name wrong, but I'm so glad you're here. So wish us luck tomorrow. We'll be doing that. So thanks for saying that, Aaron. Oh,
yeah.
BP sent me a profile of Carlito. He's got a big old afro.
Yeah, he also has a mustache and like a maybe facial hair on his chin, maybe. So he's got a goatee or something.
He looks funny. All right. Well, thank you, Aaron.
You're welcome.
Can't wait to do this again next Friday. All right. We'll see you then.
All right, see you in a little bit.
Bye. All right, that is Aaron. And we're just going to get straight into the music. And those of you that are new and don't know about Aaron, my son, just support him if you can when he comes in here and does Friday. He tries really hard. He does have autism, so it is something that he tries to work through, and that's why he's starting here before he does his own show, just to get practice with me, and he wants to teach his mom a little something something. So yeah, he does a great job. I appreciate him so very much. All right, last night, Tuttles, Bam Bam, I always call him Bam Bam. You might get confused if you hear Bam Bam, but Tuttles and I, we watched the music documentary, Punk Attitude. It's free on YouTube if you'd like to watch it. If you're into music, it's worth a watch. It's got a lot of great music in it. Again, when I say punk music, most people think of the late 70s, Sex Pistols, The Clash, that genre. They don't think of where this documentary starts. And it starts with the 60s, the early 60s. So let me read a little bit. Most of the documentaries on punk tend to start out in the same place, in the mid 70s music. Don Letts, a former producer, icon in the scene, as well as a director of the documentary, The Clash, Westway to the World, digs deeper than that, going back to the 60s and early 70s, finding roots of the coming musical uprising, not just in expected places like the Velvet Underground, MC5, Iggy Pop, but also in the jaggedy poppy sounds of many now mostly forgotten garage bands. Once we reach the late 70s, Letts, on a more familiar ground, through his impressive roster of interviewees, everyone from the New York Dolls, David Johansen, who I couldn't figure out for the life of me. I'm like, who is this guy? I mean, I knew he was in the Velvet Underground, but I totally forgot he was Buster Poindexter too. But that's who David Johansen. To Jim Jarmusch, Jello Myfra. Sorry, Jello. Henry Rollins, Wayne Kramer, Glenn Baraka, Chrissy Hines, which keeps a fresh, clear-eyed perspective on everything. And instead of just ending in a blur sometimes in the early 80s, with the initial burst of rage that subsides, the film explores what happened afterwards in the underground music, with New Wave becoming the acceptable industry of the face of punk, they said. Cute outfits, dancey beat pops, and not so angry. The ultimate setting, the stage for Nirvana to rip apart the mainstream music in 1992. Say what you mean what you say, and put a beat to it, is what John Lennon would say. So let's start at the beginning of the documentary, and you would hear Know Your Rights by The Clash. Starts off the film, if it's going to play for me, I hope. Yes. Three of them. So The Clash played a significant role in the emergence of punk rock. Formed in London in 1976, they were the key players in the original wave of British punk rock. Billed as the only band that matters, they blended elements of reggae, dub, funk, ska, and rockabilly. Riding the wave of British punks, they brought the fiery genre to a wider audience than ever before, becoming iconic rock figures of their era. All right, so that is how the documentary starts, is with a little bit of The Clash playing in the background. No, you're right. All right, we're going to move on to the first performer that they talked about is Jerry Lee Lewis. Now, again, you don't think Jerry Lee Lewis and punk music, but once you get into thinking about it, they were. I mean, it was anybody that was rebelling against whatever they could rebel against. You know what I mean? And he was pretty rebellious Jerry Lee Lewis. So Jerry Lee Lewis, a whole lot of shaking going on. Thank you, Mike. And they're talking about American, he's an American singer, songwriter, and guitarist who was one of the most popular and influential performers in the rhythm and blues and rock and roll music in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Jerry Lee Lewis, whole lot of shaking going on. All right, we're going to move on to Chuck Berry, another one you wouldn't think would be in the category of punk rock music. You can't catch me. Let's go. And it says, Berry is undeniably one of the most influential figures in the history of rock music and helping to create rock and roll from the crucible to the rhythm and blues. He combines clever lyrics, distinctive guitar sounds, boogie-woogie rhythms, precise distinction and astounding stage shows, and musical devices characteristic of country, western music, and the blues in his many best-selling single records and albums. A distinctive, if not technically dazzling guitarist, Berry's used electronic effects to replicate the ringing sounds of the bottleneck blues guitarist in his recordings. All right, you can't catch me, Chuck Berry. Now, the next couple songs were kind of just in the background. The first one is Joni Mitchell, Woodstock. This is just in the background when they were going from talking from one interview or talking, you know, about the next one. And then the next song is Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix. They didn't talk much about him. They were just kind of going through the Chuck Berry into Jimi Hendrix and then going into, here, I'll play a little bit of Purple Haze. That's the one that's in the background. But it goes very quickly into the next group, Question Mark and the Mysterians. But we'll play a little bit of Purple Haze. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, BP. All right. I even played more than they did in the movie. So the next song is 96 Tears. Now, 96 Tears is by Question Mark and the Mysterians. I know you'll know it once you hear it. Oh, where did it go? There it is. All right. Let's play it and I'll talk about it. I love this type of music. It just makes you want to get up and shake your booty. So know, you wouldn't think that this song is the precursor to punk rock, but it was considered the precursor to punk rock. The piercing organ riffs, bare bones vocal tracks, and low fidelity production in 96 Tears contributes to its status as a safe candidate for one of the first garage punk songs ever. The band's enthusiasm and sheer love for rock and roll were infectious, and their impact on the punk movement cannot be overlooked. In fact, Question Mark and the Mysterians were the first band to be explicitly described as punk rock, and they played a significant role in shaping the genre's early sound and attitude. You know, it's funny, Bam, now that they talk about the organ and you hear it, I'm wondering if that's that same organ that El Carpe was talking about in his brother's band. I don't know. They wanted to be 69-2. Oh, really, BB? I can see it in that era of love when they're, some of these artists are talking about, you know, from when it was the hippies and they were trying to take the hippies out. They didn't want the hippie music anymore. And all the hippies wanted to do was smoke dope, make love in the streets. So I can see that. 96 Tears. Question Marks and the Mysterians. All right. Are you joking with me? Was that a joke? Is that a joke, Beefy? All right, the next song is You Really Got Me by The Kinks. Let's see what we have on that. I'll play it and then I'll read again. So. It says The Kinks, a British rock band, they played a significant role in shaping the punk ethos. And even though they were not typically considered the first punk band, their iconic song, You Really Got Me, released in 1964, established a gritty guitar tone that would later influence bands like the Ramones and the Sex Pistols. The Kinks weren't the first punk band, of course, but their innovative guitar sound and rebellious attitude left an indelible mark on the evolution of punk rock. The Kinks. Oh, yeah. I thought afterwards, I thought, I'm so gullible. He probably just got me right now. All right. The next song we have is the group is The Count Five. Psychotic Reaction is the name of the song. Let's see what we have about Count Five. I'll play it while I talk about them. I love all this type of music. It reminds me of the Monkees and all that, you know. So Count Five was an American garage rock band from San Jose, California in 1964. Although they are not typically associated with punk music movement, their hit, Psychotic Reaction, has been considered a proto-punk track. Proto-punk refers to the music that laid the groundwork for punk rock by incorporating elements of rebellion, raw energy, and the DIY ethos. The song Psychotic Reaction features distorted guitars and driven rhythm and rebellious lyrics which align with punk rock. Welcome, Torin. So that is a little bit of Count Five, Psychotic Reaction. We're going to move on to the next band that was in the documentary. Well, the next music that was in the documentary, The Velvet Underground. And I believe this is the one for you, Bam Bam. I think this is the song. Venus in Furs is the name of it. But once you hear it, it says shiny, shiny something. So I think this is the one. The Velvet Underground played a significant role in shaping punk and alternative rock movements of the 1970s and 80s. Their primal guitar sounds and urban lyrics were influenced by avant-garde art and modern literature. The band's innovative approach pushed the boundaries of what was considered acceptable in pop music. The Velvet Underground experimental and avant-garde sound paved the way for alternative rock, punk, and other genres that would follow. So here it is, Venus in Furs. Hi, Ryan. Welcome. Thank you, Torin. And the Velvet Underground was Lou Reed. Lou Reed was in. Welcome, Steve. So that is Venus in Furs, performed by the Velvet Underground. They're in here a couple times. In fact, the next song is called Heroin. It's by the Velvet Underground or Lou Reed, John Cale, and Nico, it says. And then there's another one, Femme Fatale, and I'm Waiting for the Man. There's like three different ones. So we'll play a little bit. We'll just play a little bit of each. We have some time. This next one we'll do Femme Fatale. And I think this is the one with the chick. Because all of a sudden, yes, this is the one with the girl. I never knew that there was a woman in the Velvet Underground. And there she is. I thought they said she was a model or something, and she also sung, and she kind of came part of the group for a little bit. And that was this song, Femme Fatale. So you see her, they talk about her. And then they go back into Lou Reed with performing. And he does the next song, which is I'm Waiting for the Man. They're all from all these songs are on the same album. It has a big old banana on it.
$6 in my hand. Up to Lexington, 125. Feel sick and dirty, more dead than alive.
I'm Waiting for the Man. Lou Reed, Velvet Underground. All right, we're going to move on to the next different band that we're going to talk about, MC5. Kick out the jams. MC5, also known as Motor City 5, I believe. Yes, Motor City 5 is what it stands for. Let's see. They were an American rock band formed in Lincoln Park, Michigan in 1963. We don't need to talk about all the band members. They're known for their loud, energetic rock band style and garage rock, hard rock, blues rock, psychedelic rock, and elements aggression, and combining radical left-wing politics. MC5 was a big influence on punk, paving the way for future bands, it says. So here is a little bit of Kick Out the Jams performed by MC5.
Right now, it's time to
And during the documentary, the guy from the band talks about that statement, what he says right there. It's time to kick out the jams, mother, blah, blah. He said that they knew that it was going to be, I can't remember the word he used, kind of like naughty or something. It was going to be bad, but they did it anyway. And I can't remember if they said that right when the album was going to be released is when the music directors or somebody heard that they said that and they got in trouble. But it was the start of them using that word all the time. Now they talk about it. You it's heard all the time on different songs. You hear it. But back then, nah. All right, we're going to stop that one there because we have another song by MC5. Looking at You is what this name of this song. And then okay, this part of it is talking about the guitarist of MC5, Wayne Kramer and Fred Smith, that they were both fans of R&B music, blues, Chuck Berry, Dick Dale, and the Ventures. On reference, they were into fast, energetic music and with a rebellious attitude. They said the band was formed into Smith's Vibratones and the Bounty Hunters in 1964. Rob Tyner, originally a bass player for the band, then later became the lead singer in renaming the band Motor City 5. The style of the rock and the band were playing was garage band, energetic style of rock and roll that was popular genre in the 60s. Motor City 5. Hi, Murphy Williams. Welcome. All right. We're going to move on to Iggy Pop. I always thought he was so strange. And then in the documentary, when you're watching it, you're like, yeah, he was a little strange. The first song we have is Gimme Danger. I'll play it while I talk about him. It says, performed by Iggy Pop or the Stooges. It might come up under the Stooges. Iggy Pop, renowned as the godfather of punk, stands as a monumental figure in rock and roll music. Born James Newell Osberg Jr., Iggy Pop's journey from industrial landscape of Detroit to global stage is a testament to his enduring impact. His significance in rock music transcends mere labels as he embodies the rebellious spirit and raw energy that defines punk rock. When this song came on, he like was standing up and totally bent backwards to where he was touching the ground with his hands backwards. I mean, like he was so, it was creepy. He looked like he should be on a scary movie. It was just, I've never seen somebody do that. Stand up and just go straight back and just, man, he just was very limber, that Iggy Pop. That is Gimme Danger. All right, we're going to move on to another Iggy Pop or the Stooges song, and it's I Want to Be Your Dog. And I know you probably have heard this one. I know I have. I'll play a little bit of it while I'm talking. Wow, that one got loud. Iggy Pop's music and stage presence were a major influence on punk rock movement. His raw, aggressive style of music combined with his confrontational and unpredictable stage persona set the template for many punk rock performers who followed in his footsteps. Yeah, he was just like so skinny and just the stuff he could do with his body, man. Iggy Pop, I Want to Be Your Dog, or I'm at the end of the Stooges, both one. He was in that band, so that is that song. Iggy Pop and both Lou Reed. I just couldn't get into those guys. I don't know why. I just couldn't get into them. I could now look back and think, okay, they were part of music, but I still wouldn't sit there and listen to the whole album. I guess I need to evolve. I don't know, but we're going to move on. New York Dolls, David Johansen, and he's been in a lot of these documentaries that we've done, CBGBs. I don't know if he was in the Roxy one. I don't think so, but he's been in a few of them for sure, CBGBs. And I didn't realize, I kept looking at him and like, who is this guy? David, he's also Buxter Poindexter. He does that persona too. So anyway, New York Dolls, the song is Looking for a Kiss.
When I say I'm in love, you best believe I'm in love, L-U-V.
New York Dolls were an American rock band in New York City, 1971, along with the Velvet Underground and the Stooges. They were one of the first bands of early punk rock scenes. They were the glam, the start of the glam rock on those guys. And there's a few songs by them. So we're going to stop this one. And let's see. The next one that I have is Personality Crisis. We'll do that one. And then there's another song, Jet Boy. There's 62 different songs on this documentary. So again, if you love music, it's worth a listen. So Personality Crisis, New York Dolls. And I'll talk a little bit more about them. The New York Dolls developed an original style of hard rock that presaged both punk and heavy metal. Their sound drew on various elements, including a dirty rock and roll of the Stones, the arnactic noise of the Stooges, and the glam rock of David Bowie and T-Rex. The fashion and attitude inspired by Mick Jagger and a touch of girl pop music, it says. New York Dolls. They kind of sound, when he's saying the Personality Crisis, I don't know. To me, it kind of sounds like the Sex Pistols a little bit there. Just that part of it. Reminds me of them. New York Dolls. All right, we're going to move on to the Dictators. Now, I remember their name. I don't really remember a whole lot of their music. The song is Search and Destroy. Here, we'll play a little bit while I talk about them. They were an American rock band, also formed in New York City in 1973. They played a significant role in proto-punk movement, which laid, again, the groundwork for punk rock. Critics John Dugan described them as one of the finest and most influential proto-punk bands who walked the earth. I don't remember them. All right, so from the Dictators, they moved on to the band Suicide. There are two songs by them, Ghost Rider and Frankie Teardrops. First, Ghost Rider, let's see, Suicide, the band formed by Alan Vega and Martin Rev, played a significant role in punk movement. Suicide emerged alongside the early glam punk scene in New York in the 70s. They gained a reputation of their proactive and confrontational live performances. While Suicide wasn't strictly a no wave, not new wave, no wave, I don't know, I've never heard no wave band, they were largely regarded as the godfathers of the music. Ghost Rider. I was still only like 5 or 6 when they were around, so that's probably why I don't remember them that well. Let's listen to a little bit of Frankie Teardrop by Suicide and see if we remember this one.
Frankie Teardrop.
Oh no.
20-year-old Frankie.
No, I thought, I was wondering if this was the guy that I was like, oh my gosh, I couldn't listen to this music. I thought, I didn't think it was, but.
He's working at a factory.
It's kind of annoying. It's kind of an annoying song. Hey, Chill Will, how are you? We're doing the music from the music documentary we watched last night, which was Punk Attitude and the beginning and. Towards the end of punk rock music. And a lot you wouldn't consider punk rock from the beginning. It was really good. And this is Frankie's Teardrop by Suicide. And we're going to stop it right now because it's a little annoying. All right. The next band that was in the documentary that they talked about was Television. And this part of it was the owner of CBGB's, which we did not too long ago, that documentary, which was really good. He was talking about Television and how bad they were. He said, they were bad. They're terrible. I can't remember the exact words it was. But here is the song, Little Johnny Jewel is the song by Television. And we'll talk about them. So a little bit about Television. It says in the early 70s, Tom Vereen and Richard Hell formed the Neon Boys with drummer Fika in New York City. In 73, the guitarist Lloyd joined them and they became Television. The band helped establish CBGB's, a club in New York City Bowery and the epic center of burgeoning punk rock scene. And the one thing that the owner of CBGB's is that anybody can play here, but you have to play your own music. You can't just come in here and play music by Jimi Hendrix. It has to be your own music. So everybody was going in there just starting off. So it was really kind of a cool place. Television's unique blend of punk energy, technical skill, and avant-garde influences made them a significant part of the punk movement, especially during the late 70s. Little Johnny Jewel Television. I'm going to play enough of it for you to hear any of them singing, but that's it, Little Johnny Jewel. The next artist, she's another one, just like Iggy Pop, and I just didn't get her, get into her, I should say. Patti Smith, there are two songs by her, yeah, just two. One of them is Grace, and the other one is Horses. We're going to do Horses. Patti Smith released her debut album, Horses. This album is considered a landmark in punk rock history. It blends rock music with poetry, creating a unique and powerful sound. The opening lines of the album, it says, "Jesus died somebody's sins, but not for mine," sets the tone of her rebellious, thought-provoking approach to music. And I believe those words, "Jesus died for somebody's sins, not mine," was in the song Grace. We're not doing that song. We're doing Horses here. And it's called Land/Horses/Land of a Thousand Dances. Yeah, I guess that's...
In the hallway, drinking a glass of tea. From the other end of the hallway, a rhythm was generating. Another boy was sliding up the hallway. He merged perfectly.
She's different. Oh, Mike, I thought you were being like Patti Smith. I thought you were doing a poem. Ouch, I fell out. I fell. The boy disappeared. Ouch, I fell. I fell out of plumbing. Suddenly, Johnny gets a feeling he's been surrounded by horses, 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 horses. Another rich white, shining silver, studs with their nose in flames. He saw horses, 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 and more horses. I never got past that part. It cheaped it. This isn't that bad. This part isn't that bad. Do the mashed potato. Huh. Interesting. Sorry for never giving you that. I never got past all the horses to listen to the all the dances that she sings about. Patti Smith, Horses. It isn't that bad once you get past the poetry, I guess. All right, so the next song is Blank Generation by Richard Hell. And I don't have anything on this song. I'm not sure why. Oh, because it's the 27th song, so I probably didn't think I was going to get this far. But anyway, Blank Generation, Richard Hell. I don't think, yeah, because we went into the Ramones, even... Yeah, Talking Heads are in there too. All right, so here's a little bit of Blank Generation, Richard Hell, and the Void Voids. Oh, I remember playing Richard Hell and the Void Voids before. Because we stopped around 47 minutes into the documentary. El Carpe came in to the show from, I believe it's Low Standards and Pores, is his podcast with his friend, and he came up and talked to us, and it was interesting to talk to him. His show is about music, hanging out with his friend and talking about music, so it was cool to talk to him.
Time is a falling at the window, the doctor says he How does Richard Hells in the Void Voids? Link Generation. All right, we're going to get into some Ramones. They got into the Ramones part. There's three different songs. I Don't Want to Walk Around You, Blitzkrieg Bop, and Loudmouth that are in this documentary. Again, this is song 28, 29, and 30. I didn't think I was going to get this far, so I apologize for not having all the information. But here is I Don't Want to Walk Around You, the Ramones. I know from the documentary, it was funny because, again, the owner of CBGB's, I believe it was the Ramones, he said, too, that they had played there, and he said that they were terrible. I thought it was the Ramones. There was a couple of bands. Television was one of them for sure. But then another guy, there was, I don't remember what band he was from. He was saying his friend took him to go see the Ramones and he hated it. He said he hated it and he couldn't understand why his friend would take him to go see this terrible band. And he said he couldn't stop thinking about him. And so even to the point where he showed up the next time to see them again and again and again, the Ramones. Definitely different looking guys for sure, especially the singer. I think Bam Bam said he looked like an alien. I Don't Want to Walk Around With You. Okay, this next one we all know. The next song and the last one that was in the documentary is Loudmouth. All right, Loudmouth by the Ramones. This next one is the one that I swear. Helium Bar by the Weirdos. I think this is the one that I was like, oh my God. No, it's not. It's not. I don't remember these guys, the Weirdos. World, it says 1977 to 1981. I don't remember them, and I don't actually remember them unless we didn't see it, but I remember them talking about this Psycho Killer, the Talking Head. So I didn't think we, yeah, because we went over, they did Talking Heads, Patti Smith, Dead Boys, and Blondie, and Sex Pistols. And those are all coming up. I'm not going to do Patti Smith since we already did it. Then they got into the Dead Boys. I Need Lunch was the song that's played. And they're from Cleveland, Ohio. Now I remember the name. I just don't remember. I'd have to look into them and listen to more of their songs to remember. The Dead Boys, young, loud, and snotty, it says. All right, so the next one that was in the documentary is actually Blondie, Out of the Streets. And they were talking about how she came up in CBGB's too. Excuse me. This song was played, but they were talking about, oh my gosh. Now I can't think of the song that the guy was talking about and how they thought, oh, why? She's kind of slow and poppy, and how is this considered punk? But I thought the same thing. I would never consider her punk, but they were talking about punk being more rebelling against something and what you stood for. I don't know, but she was in it anyway. Blondie. Yes, BP. Bam Bam said the same thing. It was Rapture, right? The song Rapture. And again, the same with that song. You wouldn't think that, oh, yeah, right, Blondie and Rapture, whatever. But yeah, you're right. I loved Blondie. I remember I grew up with the way I was introduced to Blondie was my mom's friend. Her son was watching us one time, me and my three brothers and one sister, all five of us, he was watching and he loved Blondie and he was playing Blondie. And I remember that so clearly because that's Heart of Glass. That's how I was introduced to Blondie. All right. Sex Pistols and there's some more. Sex Pistols, God Save the Queen. This is when it really got, they talked about anarchy in the UK. I haven't even gotten that far, but God Save the Queen. And all of a sudden, punk was these kids ripping their clothes and putting safety pins everywhere and buying clothes like that instead of when it first started out, that was how people dressed because they were trying to hold their clothes together. And then all of a sudden it became a fashion statement. Very anti-establishment for sure. What time is it? Okay. And then they got into Public Image in this next Nag, Nag, Nag. That's the one I keep thinking that. Here, let's do a little bit of Public Image Rise. It was also in the documentary. Now, wait a minute. Maybe it was like in the background, but it wasn't played that much. It might have just been the beginning of it because I'd have to go back and find where this one is. I could be right. I could be wrong. I could be white. I could be wrong. I could be right. I could be wrong. So that's Public Image Rise. This next one, it has got to be this next one. I keep talking about it because there's this one song in there that is like, oh my God, I couldn't listen to that music. This is it. Cabaret Voltaire. It's called Nag, Nag, Nag. Ah! It hurts my ears. No, I don't know. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, guys. That's all I can play of the song. Nag, nag, nag. Cabaret Voltaire. That's, yeah. All right, we're going to end with Religion by Public Image. Let me see if I have the point on where this is in the movie. No, I don't. Anyway, we ended at right around 47 minutes and 30 seconds in this movie. Right, just say 47 minutes. And then we're going to watch the next 40-ish minutes next Thursday and finish up the soundtrack next Friday. But right now, Religion, Public Image, LTD.
Collapse. Till I see ears bleed. This is religion.
And this was released in April 25th, 2005 at the Tribeca Film Festival. And it was generally reviewed as favorable, 3.5 to 4 stars, it said. I've liked it so far. But I like learning about music and, you know, where it's come from. And this has really opened my eyes out to what they considered punk rock and what, you know, the music industry considered punk rock. All right, that is Religion. Public Image, LTD. All right, well, that went by fast. We will be back next Thursday, like I said, to finish watching this documentary. Back on Friday to do the music and more sports with Aaron. But until then, I am going to leave you guys like I always leave you. If it'll work for me, let's see. Be the reason someone smiles today. Let your smile change the world, but don't let the world change your smile. Oh my gosh, I haven't said that for a while. I forgot almost. Thank you guys so much for coming back and being here. One of the biggest things that's I was so nervous about, you know, cutting it back to one day a week, well, 2 days, was losing my friends. I love hanging out with you guys, and it's hard, but you know, I need to get some stuff done, and we need to help Lewis's dad and moving and everything. So for right now, Thursdays and Fridays, and then I'm going to push some squats and thoughts in there too. I have 2 interviews coming up that'll be great. So I will let you guys know about that when that happens. But I love you guys. I hope you guys have a great weekend. It's supposed to be rainy, so I'm really glad that this stair climb is indoors so we can do it inside because it's supposed to be really rainy tomorrow. Again, keep your fingers crossed for Aaron and I. I really want to finish this. I really want to do all 1,998 steps. However long it takes me to do it, I really want to accomplish that goal. And then off to the next one because I told Aaron I want to do this is 8. I don't know. Maybe we'll hit 10. And then after 10, we'll try to do 20 and just keep doing them. So yeah. All right, guys, I love you. And I will see you next time. Bye.
1, 2, 3, 4.
There's no happy medium with that. Ooh, everybody's gone. Just you and me, Mike. Just you and me.